Say when. Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. Remember, we are the Resistance. I'm Brent Henderson, and this is the place where we help men break free from the lies that have been keeping us stuck, and that goes for all of us. You know, it's those things that maybe we get quiet about, we're striving, trying to fix, but we want you to step fully into who God says that you are. And that's kind of why we do this. So if this podcast helps you, I want to encourage you to subscribe, leave us a review, share it with someone who needs it. And if you want to support the ministry, you can do that at unleashed.men by clicking on the donate button. And it really, truly does help us keep reaching men right where we are. So, Kevin?
Yeah.
Really good to have you back,
dude. Hey, baby. I'm happy to be here.
I know. I came walking and I saw your nice big Tundra.
Yeah.
Sitting outside and I was jealous.
It got a lot of miles on it.
Does it?
I mean, just this last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that in a second. Yeah. Here. You put, like, how many miles did you do the last week?
Probably put on about 3,200.
Oh, you did some driving.
Yeah. It's the last 11 days, 12 days. Yeah, I left 2 weeks ago today.
Yeah. That's like driving to Juneau. I mean, that's about the equivalent.
But then you got to get back.
Yeah, that's true. I've made that drive. Not a whole lot of fun. Well, man, Christmas is 4 days away.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go. I love Christmas.
I know. I do too. You know, today I kind of want to talk about, you know, I love the peace of Christmas when you're sitting there and you get music playing and no technology is going and you got the lights of the tree and the fire crackling. And then the memories start to come in and you have these wonderful memories. But then somehow some begin to like creep in. You're kind of like, and they're not bad memories. They're good because you're missing, maybe grieving, like my parents are gone. You have that grief. It's a good memory, but it's hard because you miss them. So yeah, I know for some of us, Christmas is, you know, maybe we're young enough. It's still like nothing, but hey, man, this is just joy and fun. And
yeah, honestly, to me, part of it is it's hunting time of year.
Oh yeah,
I mean that's part of what I did on my last 3,200 miles is I hit some.
Okay, so I'm curious. You were hunting.
Yeah.
And last week, we had some pipes freeze up. The wind chill here got down to almost 30 below zero. Were you hunting in that mess?
No. I was in Texas for that mess. It was like 65, 70 degrees.
Okay, you're cheating.
I was outside playing pickleball. It was great. No, I was in Missouri this last week and was hunting with a buddy of mine. It was great to be back up in the deer stand. Just fantastic. It'd been a few years for me. So
yeah, I get up one morning and I see that there's a video of you. Yeah. I'm like, a video?
Could you even hear me talking?
Yeah, well, you were real quiet.
I was like, hey, Brent, this is Kevin. I'm hunting deer.
We're doing a podcast from the tree stand. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Yeah. Welcome back to the roar.
Say when.
Yeah, and, you know, it was private land. My buddy's got 30 acres out there, all wooded. So just absolutely perfect. Freaking deer trails everywhere. They're not very big. Because they're kind of contained in the city.
Yeah.
We're inside city limits, so it's only archery, right? There's no muzzle loading or rifle allowed.
No big food plots around.
Yes. And so, you know, we're positioned perfectly with the wind coming at us, and it was really cold. It was really cold. And I'm not a gloved guy. I don't care. I just refuse to wear gloves. And so, you know, you're like, you're tucking your fingers and curling up against your clothing and whatever you can do to stay warm. But, you know, when you're hunting archery, it's not too big of a deal because you can kind of keep your hands.
Yeah, but and the thing is, you can't move a whole lot.
No, not too much.
So you're flexing underneath your clothing. You're flexing every muscle you've got.
Yeah, you're like twitching and slowly moving. So anyway, saw a lot of deer. Most of them were 75, 85 yards away and, you know, in all the trees and stuff. And anyway, there's a deer there that they nicknamed Seven. It's 4x3, tiny buck. The rack is the smallest rack I've ever seen for anything with 4 points on one side or the other. Just kind of like this little, you know, isn't that cute, you know?
Right.
But my buddy was like, hey, we need the meat. It'd be great. You know, if you see it, feel free to drop it. Okay. So it of course appears 90 degrees straight to my left, which you can kind of shoot, but the position I had in the tree stand was rough. And I had a 10-inch window between two trees, and that's what I had. Well, needless to say, Brent, I killed two trees.
You killed the trees?
I killed two trees.
Oh, yeah.
The first one nicked something on the way. There was brush everywhere.
You had two shots?
Yes. It was awesome. So it goes, whack, when it hit the tree, right? And I was like, well, there goes the deer. And it jumped and it looked around and it was like, what the heck was that sound? And then it started sniffing. And it had been sniffing me the whole time and grunting and, you know, stomping on the ground. And, but it didn't go. It went about 10 yards and it came back to the exact same spot. But this is all like directly away from the trees and then right back. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Okay, I waited 45 minutes. I shot the other tree. It never popped to the right or to the left of where it was.
Oh, wow.
And I was so mad at myself. I mean, it was a tough, tough, tough angle. Here's the news. I was like, I either hit the tree or I kill the deer. Like,
You hear that whack?
It wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was going to maim the deer.
Yeah.
I was either going to kill it or just hit a tree.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's safe enough for me. So I killed two trees.
Sorry, guys.
Not the manly man story today.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. When they get to blowing and stomping, and they've got inside their hooves, they've got an interdigital gland. And when they start doing that stomp,
yeah,
you know, the theory is that it is putting down another smell that other deer around it go, hey, there's a warning here.
Something's here.
And it's crazy. You can have a deer like that. I've done that where you shot and something happened and it hit a branch or something and they didn't get hit. And they will stand there for the longest time without doing anything. Just like, okay, I'm not going to move.
Nothing happened to me if I'm right here.
Right.
if I'm exactly right here, so I'm not going to move anywhere. Yeah.
But they can just stand. The only thing you might see is
I'll just say the second time I hit the second tree, it was like, I'm out of here.
What kind of tree was it? At least did you take it home?
Oh, gosh.
Did you get your arrow? Was it too high?
I could unscrew the arrow.
Broadheads
were deep.
We're using fixed broadhead or expandable?
Expandable on one and fixed on the other.
Equal opportunity.
Well, this is a little embarrassing. I only went out with three arrows because I'm good.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Because you're thinking, how many times in a tree stand have I ever shot more than three arrows?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm thinking. I get it.
And then I was like, well, down to one arrow. Now what do I do? And I'd cleared the forest with the second shot because it was like thwack, and they were like, everything was just gone. And then my buddy drives up like 5 minutes later in his truck, and he's like, did I hear you shoot at something? I go, well, what did you hear?
He's right.
Like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I heard a tree murmuring.
He didn't hit
anything either, but he did kill. I sent you a picture of the deer he killed.
You did?
Friday or Saturday.
I couldn't tell from the angle how many points were on it.
Seven also, was it but it seven? Was a wider rack. It wasn't like this little cute,
right?
Like Christmas decoration.
Wasn't Rudolph. Right. He was young. Right. Yeah.
Anyway, then by the way, then I went pheasant and quail hunting and we did have success,
but not with a bow.
So you can hunt pheasant with a bow, and I have before.
Yeah.
They have a special type of arrow. I forget what it's called, but, has a cool name, but essentially it has a whole bunch of feathers on the back end of it. I don't know if you've ever seen them or not, but that's how I used to hunt pheasant with a bow. So pheasant jumps.
Flu flus,
yeah. So pheasant jumps, only goes like 30 yards and drops straight down on the ground. I've done that before, and that's a blast.
Yeah.
But no, this time I was hunting with a shotgun out in central Kansas.
That's something great for men's ministries. If you want to, like, when you got your men's groups together and you want something fun to do, you know, get some bows, you know, some traditionals, and get some flu flus, and you can take these little, like, styrofoam targets, and you throw them up in the air.
Yeah.
And you guys, because then you don't have to go very far to retrieve the arrow. You can just keep shooting them. It's fun.
I never thought about doing that with men's ministry. That's a great idea.
Oh, it's a ball.
Anyway, I did that when I was a lot younger. I haven't done it for 20 years.
Well, man, it is really good to have you back. I've been doing the last few on my own.
Yeah, you did a great job. I listened to them. I thought they were fantastic. Great sound effects, Brent. Well done.
You know, it's amazing to get, you know, guys getting things happening where they're listening closely and reaching out to me and saying, dude, I was a mess after, in a good way. I needed to hear that. Like the last one, I think, was like walking the trail from unforgiveness to forgiveness.
Right.
I had so many people come back and saying, I really struggle with forgiveness, and it's keeping me hostage because I'm staying angry. And, you know, you can ask someone for forgiveness. They may never forgive you, but you're released.
I think it's fair to say, Brent, that, and you're really good about this, I think, but just, you know, again, for everyone to hear, it's not like you and I have this all figured out. We also walk the road from unforgiveness to forgiveness, you know.
I was sitting on the couch this morning. I was watching the highlights from the Steeler-Lions game. I'm a Steelers fan, so it was kind of a fun day. But a cardiac moment at the end. That was about, you know, here's my heart surgery just, you know, 3.5 months ago. And I'm going, is this a good idea to be watching the end of this game? But I was sitting on the couch this morning and drinking my coffee and watching the highlights. And I get a message from a guy who I know. doesn't live near me. And we have some similar story background together, love for men's ministry and seeing guys change. We both love the outdoors, love hunting. And he's going through some really difficult times with one of the kids in his family right now. And I don't know what it is. It just seems like there are certain ages sometimes with our kids where they're trying to figure some things out. And so there can be a little bit of a wedge that can kind of come between you is, you know, they have to spread their wings and fly. They have to learn how to be able to handle something. You as the adults try to maybe help them and gently make them understand something. But the bottom line is they got to figure it out. And sometimes it works out well. Sometimes it gets really difficult. And for this gentleman, it just really was breaking his heart this morning. So I spent quite a bit of time going back and forth with him this morning, you know, processing. I get it. I know it. And here's the thing I kind of wanted to go into today. It's really interesting we're talking about this because, to me, fall, winter, you know, I love hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And late season deer can be really fun because now they've slowed down and kind of isolated to either bedding or either going to food plots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're cold, but now they're not running all over the place. Rut's fun because you're seeing deer you never see. But it's that time of the year when now the hunting is kind of had Thanksgiving come in and you have some late season deer and now you're getting all of your Christmas decorations up. You're getting all your Christmas presents ready and wrapped and we've got them all under the tree. But something else really hit me and you and I were talking about this kind of before we kind of turned the mics on. Christmas is a wonderful time, a joyous part of the year. And for some of us, sometimes it can bring back good memories and sometimes they can be attached to kind of grief. I don't know what Christmas was like. What do you have when you go back and you think about your Christmases? Yeah. What are some memories you go, dude, this was like my best Christmas ever?
It's funny, the Christmas I most readily remember, and I'm conscious of the fact that it could be just through stories told to me, right? Because I was 5 years older. Actually, I was turning five the next month. So it was 1973. And I got one of those plastic bowling kits, like you set up the little pins down the sidewalk, and you had your little black plastic ball, and you.
Yep. And they're not deep enough holes to put your fingers in. Just like you can just grip it with your fingers.
I mean, when you were four.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, that was just one of the best gifts ever, and I just loved it, and I just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. But I also remember at dinner time, and again, remember could be stories told me, but it's fresh in my mind still today. My granddad was saying, this is 1973. He was saying, 74, Betty no more. 74, Betty no more. Betty was my grandma. And he was divorcing her the next year. She was at the table, Brent.
When he's saying this?
Uh-huh. At the table. My family was, I could tell my parents were deeply grieved, super bothered by the whole thing. You know, I remember talking about on the drive home. I had a sister, who was 2 years younger than me, another sister that hadn't come along yet. And I remember my mom teaching me what divorce was on the drive home.
Oh, yeah.
From California. We would drive every year to California for either summertime or Christmas time or both. My dad was a teacher, so it was pretty easy to take a lot of time off and do those things. Anyway, so I'll never forget that Christmas. It was both a joy. It was also the last time we saw that house. That house was on the beach at Corona Del Mar in California. That property is like $30 million, $40 million today. I mean, on the sand. Like, we would sleep on the porch, sandy porch, listening to the waves, you know, like taking naps.
Wow.
It was just amazing. And I barely remember, again, if I even do, being there. But I remember years and years and years of still going to that beach and seeing that house and being like, that was our house. That was our house. That was our house. So there was a lot of grief in that just because she ended up, you know, alone for quite a while after that. And he had been, you know, whatever, his story is a different story, but he came to know the Lord near the end of his life. So that's a major praise. And she knew the Lord. So, you know, it turned out wonderful, but you never know what the Lord's plans are in some of those moments. But so that's probably the interestingly enough, it's odd. I've had great Christmases. You know, I've had wonderful times with family and, you know, trips here and trips there, but that's the one that sticks in my mind.
When I decided to kind of talk about this, I was like, man, we got the Christmas, you know, this week. I think it's in, 3 days? We got Christmas coming up here. This is Monday, in case
my anniversary is tomorrow.
Happy anniversary.
This is a three-day extravaganza for me. I love it. Anniversary is tomorrow, 33 years, then Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day. Yeah.
Wow, congrats.
Yeah, thank you, man.
That's huge.
Excited. Yeah, very excited.
Well, I was sitting, I was like, man, I want to talk about something that's really good, but I don't necessarily want to, like, put a bow on it like you would a Christmas present. I want it to be because Christmas, like the gentleman messaging me this morning, I just felt like God had him reach out to me because he knew that this was a direction. Yeah, Brent, what we were talking, like God and I talking yesterday about this podcast, saying, yeah, this is real. Guys are really struggling with that. I'm struggling with it. There's things in my life that are struggling with this. So I sat down and I was kind of going through some personal stories and I just kind of put a few notes down. And I was kind of looking at layers of loss that we go through because Christmas is wonderful. And I want to encourage you guys to listen close to this because I want you to be able to be present, not just with giving your presents, but I want you to be present and not have to be struggling with, you know, what were Christmases like back then? Why aren't they like that now? Because the message of Christmas is Jesus came to this world to save us. Mm-hmm. That has never changed. And he came to turn those ashes into beauty. So I sat down, and I just want to read a couple of the notes that I looked at, because it's easier for me sometimes when I want to get personal to kind of write down my thoughts, and then I don't forget them. But, you know, for me, Christmas used to mean one thing. And every single year growing up, our entire family, we would gather together at my grandma's house. From my earliest memories until I was, I think, 21 years old, you know, we'd pull into a driveway, we'd be opening gifts from all the relatives, you know, the smell of the cookies baking. My cousins and I would sleep under the kitchen table because there weren't enough beds. You know, that's where we had to kind of like put blankets down and lay, but we didn't care. It was like an adventure. It was my family. It was tradition. And then in 1981, my grandmother passed away. And that was the first Christmas where we didn't go to her house.
Yeah, that's
and
rough.
It is. That first one is always tough. And if you've ever lived that moment, you know what I'm talking about, because everything just starts to feel off. The calendar, you know, might say it's Christmas, but your heart, it knows something is missing. And then later, my dad's mother, we're talking only within a year. My dad's mother and stepfather passed away less than a week apart. And that was kind of the end of all the cousins getting together on that side of the family. There's no bouncing back and forth between relatives' homes. No more kind of seeing what everybody got for Christmas. No more disappearing into other rooms. You know, like we would watch movies and play games together. Those traditions just kind of all stopped. Well, then I had kids of my own. And they never knew my grandparents, but they did get about 15 years of Christmases with parents on both sides of the family. Well, that is until a car accident right after the Christmas in 2013 changed everything. And my dad suffered brain damage. He could never walk again after that. He passed away in 2014, and my mom passed away a little over 4 months later. And Christmas, at that point, was never the same. And then if that wasn't enough, then I went through a divorce not long after, only a matter of, I don't know, maybe less than a year, I think it was, after that. About a year. And if you've ever walked through divorce, first of all, that's not easy to talk about. I get it. And you know, it's not just that the marriage ends. The traditions end, the rhythms of life end, the holiday your kids were used to, the shared memories. And then you carry guilt because your kids are affected too. I know you know what I'm talking about if you've ever been through the pain of this. And you wish you could heal their hearts, but you can't. You know, you're unpacking old ornaments that you used to hang with, you know, both the parents, both being in the house together. And it just, everything begins to feel different because you know things drastically change. You open boxes filled with memories that don't fit in your life anymore. And grief sneaks up on you when you least expect it, especially like we were talking about, sitting in the morning, drinking my coffee, looking at the tree or the fire. And some people, you know, they can move forward pretty quickly through changes like that. Kids too. But some, you know, they can carry anger or unforgiveness. And that gentleman that was messaging me this morning, that's something that he's struggling with right now within the family. And it breaks your heart. You don't know what to do with it. You know, some kids just numb out. But here's the truth that we don't talk about enough. Healing hurts. Healing takes time. And even when you move forward, there's still a hole.
It gets smaller.
It does.
And it gets filled.
Yeah.
With the Spirit. But yeah, there's still a hole.
I mean, I want to come back and say this very clearly. Like you just said, I've remarried. I've been married 8 years now. I'm very happy. I have 3 stepchildren. I'm grateful for my life today. But that doesn't mean that the pain wasn't real.
Right.
You know, you can't bury grief and expect it to disappear. And you can't treat your kids like they should all process that change exactly the same way.
Right. They're not gonna.
Yeah. Some kids embrace it, some fight it. Mm. You know, and pretending that it doesn't matter, it only deepens the wound, especially for the child, because it was very, like you just said, you know, 73. Yeah.
I mean, bro.
What was it he said 50, again?
74, Betty, no more.
I don't even know how you, sitting at a table, go, what do we do with that?
I mean, again, I was, you know, like I said, almost 5 years old. I didn't have a clue. It just was weird to me because I saw the reactions of the family. My aunt was there. My uncle was there. They weren't married yet, neither of them at this point in time. Brother and sister, of course, to my mom. And it was my mom's dad. And, yeah, it's crazy.
So,
Brent,
here's what I want to ask you. Because the question kind of becomes, how do we find peace and even moments of joy? Like you just said, you know, the hole gets smaller. How do we find that at Christmas when the pain is still there?
I love this question. And you know that phrase, joy comes in the morning?
Oh, yeah.
There's something to that that we have to think about, which is, so what comes before joy? And it's the grieving process. It's the lamenting. It's the... So when you sent this over to me, I looked up a few Bible verses around just how the Bible guides us in terms of pain and hurt and et cetera, loss. And interesting, I'm not surprised at all, but interesting, I just came back with 4 great verses from Psalms. One is in Psalm 13 and then 23 and then 34 and then 42. But what it came back with was in the first 2 verses, chapter 13 and chapter 42, is that it's okay. I mean, here is it. Listen, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Talk about lamenting and freaking out. I would freak out if I thought the Lord had forgotten me. My tears have been my food day and night.
Yeah.
Like you, if you've hurt, you know that phrase.
Yeah.
At the same time, Psalm 34, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Psalm 23, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So there's no promise that we get to avoid valleys. None, right? But there is promise of his presence in them. And then I think it's also fair to say that, men, I don't give you permission to feel bad or to display your feelings. The Lord says it's good.
Yeah.
Jesus wept.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's interesting where that happened, too, when you think about Lazarus.
Yes. His buddy.
He comes, you know, into town knowing what's going on.
Yep.
And he knows it's going to be a few days before he's going to raise Lazarus. But what does he do in the in-between? When everyone's grieving, he enters into the grief with them.
Yes, Isaiah 53. And we talk about that oftentimes, usually around Easter time. But he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. I mean, it's our society has done this, well, it's potentially Satan has done this amazing job of making us feel like we can't share or express that things aren't, you know, peachy keen and rosy for us. Not that we would use those
words.
Well,
I've said there's only 2 emotions that men are kind of given permission to do, and one is joy and one is anger.
Yeah.
Like the football game, I had both. Right?
Yeah.
But that felt masculine, yeah. So it was okay. But you start talking about getting teary-eyed because of some memories.
Yeah.
Well, guys are like, I don't know if I'm allowed to show that.
Right. Or, you know, you'll never see me cry. That's too bad.
Yeah. Because if I cry, that means they have power over me. No, it means you love them.
Yeah. It means you have power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was sitting there talking to Stacy, and I was talking about, you know, this thing with Lazarus. And what was so important was because I was sharing some memories with her, feeling the loss. Sometimes it can be loss with your own child. Sometimes it can be with your parents that are gone, whatever. And she was just listening to me. And that's what Jesus was doing with the people before Lazarus' death. He was present with them. And I think one of the best ways, because here's the thing about grief. My pastor for years, Keith Wooden, you know Keith.
Oh, yeah.
He said to me, he goes, one time he goes, Brent, you're one of the best at untangling unhealthy thoughts, emotions, and actions. He says, you can do it really quick. You can help others do it. And this was after the loss. Actually, it was the loss of marriage and the grief that I was going through.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, Brent, grief isn't something you can just untangle. Grief is something you have to walk through.
Yeah.
It takes time. You can't just go, well, here's the formula to get past it.
Yes. And you know what the formula most guys use is? Just bury it.
Yeah.
But when you bury it, you carry it.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so as I was thinking about this, and Lazarus being present for them, what was Stacy doing that was helping me? She was listening. She was giving empathy. I'm so sorry. And he was even touched. Maybe she would grab my hand or put her head on my shoulder or just grieve with me, get teared up with me. And sometimes one of the greatest things we can do to help someone walk through the grief, let them tell their story. Because if, like you said, if you bury it, you carry it. But when you can talk about it and get it out, there's a way that there's just something that happens when we process with someone else.
Yes.
And it really, the whole goal with that is to be able to say, here's what I'm feeling. Because if you do not process what you are feeling, you are like a pressure cooker. And that pressure cooker, if you don't turn that valve and let some of that pressure out, it's going to come out in anger. You're going to blow up somehow.
Yeah, process allows progress.
Yeah, that's a great,
yep. Yep.
I'm going to write that down.
I mean, I just came up with it, so you can have it.
Process?
Process?
No, you can't remember what you said.
I do. Process. Oh, yes, allows progress.
Yeah.
Allows progress?
No, I think it's
well, we'll have to listen fosters. To it later, see what I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, process. If you don't process, you can't progress through the pain, through the guilt, through the. And it's interesting. I think some of what you're saying is this idea that it's okay to both have hope and still be in pain.
Yeah.
Like I think they talk about, was it survivor's guilt sometimes?
Yes.
But that's a thing that's actually like that's okay. It's okay to still have hope, even though you're still in pain. In fact, let's be honest. How do you want to get through that pain if you don't have hope?
You can't.
It's just miserable.
And there's two things I think are really important when I think about that. One is we have to trust God that whatever that wound is, maybe it's in someone else, they're holding anger, like the gentleman I was talking about this morning with one of his children. You have to trust that God is working in that child as well. And it's something that child has to go through to be able to come full circle, to come back, for them to be able to see revelation. For that to happen, you have to have those aha moments. And sometimes it's not pretty. Hmm. It can be ugly. But they won't know something until they know it. So we have to kind of be able to step back sometimes and look at the situation and go, I want what God wants here. And it's not going to be easy. But I know I can look back in my own life and I can look at some things like that. I can remember being angry at my dad one time. This is really interesting. So this is back in Pennsylvania. I think I was 18 at the time.
So 1973?
Yeah, it was about 1936. And it was 30-degree wind chill out below zero outside. And I felt like my dad didn't care about me. Now, my dad loved me, but he wasn't a person that had a lot of words like, son, I love you, right? And I was so hurt and so mad about something. And it was around money. It was about a payment that I owed him, and it was my keyboard payment or something that I had. And he kept using it to try to get me to step up to do it. And I just didn't want to listen to him. And so I got mad because I felt like he didn't care. That's all he wanted to talk about. So I grabbed my shotgun. Now, this is not going where you think it's going.
Hey, Dad.
I'll be back. And so I didn't put a hat on, and I wanted him to see me without gloves and without a hat. And I went to the top of the mountain behind our house.
Was he
30
like
minus 30 wind chill with my shotgun? And I think I was wanting him to look at me and going, you're going to be so cold out there, it's dangerous. Or what are you going to do? You know, it was like, because I was young and stupid.
I would have looked at my kid and said, you're dumb.
Yeah, well, yeah. But
what are you doing, boy?
And I remember being up there and freezing and going, this is the dumbest thing I've ever
done. Yes.
And I got back.
How long am I going to wait before I go back in?
I know, right? Yes. Or where can I go to look like I'm outside, but I'm warm.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, neighbor's house.
Yeah.
So I come back in the house, and I'm freezing. And at first, I was like wanting to blame him, you know, because I was so cold. You know, it's like I was venting. And he kind of let me do it. And then he said, I want to talk. We went downstairs to the basement. And he could see I had so much anger towards him.
Yeah.
But whenever you have that kind of anger, underneath it, there's love. That's why you're so angry and why you're so hurt.
Yeah, because you're, yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I said, Dad, I said, I don't know that I've ever really heard you say to me, I love you. And he started to cry. He wept. Jesus wept. And he said, Brent, he goes, I don't remember my dad ever telling me that. My dad was a good man, but he was always out in the barn working on cars. You know, he worked on the highway. He was never there. And he began to tell me some of his stories from growing up. And all of a sudden, I understood why he was the way he was. So it wasn't that he didn't love me. He didn't know how to communicate those words. From that conversation on, he never, ever got off the phone with me, even until before he passed, without saying the word,
that's
I
awesome.
Love you.
So those cold hands were worth it.
Yeah, and it was he let me get to where I had to be to finally get it all out.
Yeah.
And then I could actually hear his story because he didn't want to be that kind of a dad to me.
Yeah.
It's what he knew.
Yeah.
And I think that's for so many of us out there as dads. You know, maybe the way that things happened to us when we were parented, we kind of, the cat's in the cradle, right?
So, yes.
But this is a good moment to pause and to remember that where your pain is, Jesus moves into that with you. He grieves with you. And so rather than maybe staying angry at one of our kids or someone close to us, we have a way of being able to go, you know what? They're going through a lot right now. Maybe it was because of the pain of a divorce. Maybe it was through death. But it's very real. And I think this time at Christmas brings all that stuff to the surface. And I think one of the best things we can do is to enter into the presence of God. Let him meet us where we are. Be there for others who need to be able to process this too. And they just, what, like I just said, they just need to know that they are loved no matter what.
Yep. 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 Good stuff, Brent.
Yeah. Boy, it's sometimes it's
Merry Christmas, everybody.
I know. So, sometimes it's therapeutic to talk about this.
It is therapeutic. That's the whole point.
So
find someone to talk to.
What's your Christmas gonna look like?
Mine? It's the weirdest one ever. No kids at home, nobody joining us for nada, just my wife and I hanging out. And you know what? Darn it, it's probably going to be too warm for a fire in the house.
It's going to be like in the 60s.
60s and rainy.
Yeah.
I don't mind the rain, but I would love to have had a reason to have a nice fire in the house.
I'd love to see big snowflakes coming down.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. But we did just have like 7 inches last week and then
I know.
6 inches the week before. So
we're the only house on our block that still has snow up on the curb. When they plowed the snow around the street, they pushed
piled
it up
by
in our
you.
Yard. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, guys.
I know.
That's awesome.
You got snow build still. A little snowman.
Yeah, you can just break it up and throw it up in the air on Christmas Day. Yeah. Watch it melt instantly.
Oh, well, guys, remember that Jesus will meet you there.
Mm-hmm.
So, personal conclusion. Let's kind of come down to this. You know, what do we do with the pain? So if you've been listening to this, you know, and you're hurting, you're confused, you're just worn down by everything you've been carrying, I want you to hear this. There isn't a formula. There isn't a timeline. There isn't a painless way through this. Grief isn't something you solve. It's something that you have to walk through. And, you know, some of us stay busy. Some of us have buried it. Some of us have carried that anger and unforgiveness because it feels safer than feeling the loss. But these weights that you're carrying, they were never, ever, ever, ever meant to be carried alone. And at some point, the bravest thing a man can do is to stop trying to be strong enough and instead be humble enough, and here it is, the key word, to surrender. And I want you to hear this clearly. God is not asking us to surrender our memories. He's inviting us to surrender the pain to him. Jesus never asked us to pretend that it didn't hurt. He's asked us to bring it to him. So surrender doesn't mean that the pain disappears. It means that it no longer defines you. And God doesn't waste surrendered pain. Hear that. He makes beauty out of ashes. So if this Christmas feels heavy, it doesn't mean you're weak, like we talked about earlier. If joy feels distant, it doesn't mean that you're failing. And if all you can do right now is show up and even whisper a prayer, that's more than you think it is, because you don't have to carry this alone. Father God, we just want to bring you this pain we've talked about. You know, it's right before Christmas, and you know, we could have done a podcast that was all fun and games and everything else, but I know that right now, all of us, we have a lot of memories. Some we We want to hold on to those because we don't want to think about the other ones. But underneath it, we don't know what to do with some of the difficult memories. And the grief we've tried to carry on our own, we have to surrender that to you because the weight is too heavy. So God, teach us how to surrender what we can't carry and how to trust you to do what only you can do. And I pray, Father, that you will meet every hurting heart that's listening to this right now. And in your time, make beauty from ashes. Mm-hmm. In Jesus' mighty name, amen.
Amen.
Well, guys, if this episode spoke to you, I just want to invite you to share it with somebody, especially now who needs it, this time of the year. Because sometimes the greatest gift we can give is letting someone know that they are not alone. And guys, you can do this. Because remember that a man who knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he's no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, he is extremely dangerous. Dangerous for good because he's been unleashed. Kevin, Merry Christmas, buddy.
Thank you, brother. Same to you and your household.
All right, we'll see you guys next time.
Cheers.